SBS Audio is supported by advertising.
Need a few minutes to reset? Great Minds is a podcast from SBS that guides you through different meditation styles from around the world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
SBS, a world of difference. You're with NITV Radio, on mobile, online and on radio.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land NITV Radio broadcasts from, the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people of the Kulin Nation and their elders past and present. We also acknowledge all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander tribes and clans we broadcast to, from the mountains to the plains, from the desert to the sea, from fresh water to salt water.
Yaman, welcome to NITV Radio. Bertrand Tungandami Gaya. I'm Bertrand Tungandami. Coming up in your program this Monday, the 8th of July. Well, today is the second day of Nido Quake. First of all, happy Nido Quake. In the program today, we look at winners of the 2024 Nido Week Awards. Also in your program today, we have a conversation with Jeremy Donovan, one of the most anticipated speakers at this year's International Conference on Thinking. Also in the program, we explore a new book released in the context of Nido Quake 2024 about the story of one woman's efforts to keep First Nations families together. All these stories and more coming to you on NITV Radio after the news.
Australia Day 1972 saw the first Aboriginal embassy erected outside Parliament.
The native title legislation must be amended.
And they've walked this land so many times before anybody came.
I am sorry.
In this bulletin, First Nations elders say this year's Nido Quake is a source of strength. New South Wales Premier Chris Minns says the death of three children in a Sydney house fire is a horrifying crime. And France on course for a hung parliament with a leftist alliance unexpectedly taking the top spot in the election. Australians are being urged to participate in Nido Quake community events during the 50th anniversary celebration of First Nations cultures and histories. The National Nido Committee says this year's chosen theme of Keep the Fire Burning, Black, Loud and Proud is about recommitting to acknowledging, preserving and sharing the First Nations cultural heritage that enriches Australia. Noongar woman and artist Liz Nako says she has made an artwork in honour of the occasion.
So it's about the actual theme for this year, which is Keep the Fires Burning, Black, Loud and Proud. And in the centre you'll see that there's actually a fire, and that whole responsibility for all of us on the outside, the lines go to the outside with all the symbols of people, represent that it's actually everybody's responsibility to keep the fires burning, both old and young, and every generation after that and every generation before. So we all are responsible for keeping that fire burning for our culture.
Noongar elder, dancer and songman Nigel Wilkes says Australians are encouraged to get to know about their local First Nations communities in events held around the country.
It is just means everything. I mean, with all those pains of the past that happened to us as a people, right now we've got to keep them fires burning, because all that strength and effort that happened yesterday and those pains of the past, now we've got to keep them alight and show all the young fellas the resilience and the strength of our fellas before us. So this right now is very important for everybody to understand that, keep the fires burning and be black, strong and proud.
New South Wales Premier Chris Minns says the deaths of three young children in a house fire in Western Sydney yesterday is a horrifying crime that has deeply traumatised the state. A 10-month-old baby girl, as well as two boys aged 3 and 6, were the victims of what police are treating as a domestic-related multiple homicide in the suburb of Lela Park. Police allege the children's 28-year-old father is likely responsible for their deaths, having allegedly attempted to thwart emergency service efforts to rescue the children from the fire. The man is in an induced coma in hospital in a critical condition due to fire-related injuries. Premier Chris Minns says the deaths of the children is devastating.
This is a horrifying and senseless act that's quite rightly outraged the entire state. These children deserved a loving home with safety and security, and instead they're gone. And I can imagine the people of New South Wales feel enormous sorrow and deep sympathy with the surviving family members this morning. This is going to leave a deep wound on the state of New South Wales and obviously on the family that's been impacted.
Four other children and their mother are being treated in hospital and are expected to survive. Minister for the National Disability Insurance Scheme, Bill Shorten, has accused the Coalition and the Greens of costing taxpayers $1 billion by delaying NDIS reforms intending on cutting non-essential services. Current regulations have allowed some members of the scheme to claim sexual services as part of their personal budget, but Minister Shorten says that is not sustainable and will be banned. He says current NDIS laws need to be amended immediately.
The laws are drafted in a way which means that periodically participants can claim things which I don't think the Parliament or people with disability ever really intended to be on the scheme. So I've put up some regulations in the Parliament. For 12 weeks, the Coalition and the Greens in the Senate have looked at it. Inexplicably, they've decided they need another 8 weeks to decide if we should be able to rule out things such as cryptocurrency, steam rooms, and indeed toys of a sexual nature. Now, this is not what the scheme was created for.
Joy and Relief has swept supporters of France's left-wing coalition, the New Popular Front, as the alliance defied surveys to take the top spot in France's snap legislative elections. The NFP have scored a major upset that is set to bar Marine Le Pen's far-right national rally from running the government, despite opinion surveys predicting a far-right win. The national rally is predicted to come in third place behind the leftist alliance, the New Popular Front and Macron's centrist camp, despite leading polls in the build-up to Sunday's vote. The election will leave Parliament divided in three big groups, the left, centrists and the far right, with hugely different platforms and no tradition at all of working together. In the meantime, Jean-Luc Mélenchon, leader of the left-wing France and Baath Party, called on President Macron to allow the leftist alliance to govern. He says a top priority of a potential left-wing government will be the recognition of a Palestinian state.
The Constitution gives the President some prerogatives in terms of foreign policy, but it also gives some to the Prime Minister. So both will have to get along in order to, for instance, recognise as soon as possible the State of Palestine.
Israel has bombed a second school in 2 days in Gaza, killing 4 people, including a Hamas-appointed bureaucrat. The airstrike targeted a church-run school in western Gaza City, which has been sheltering hundreds of Christians and Muslims from Israel's offensive that has killed over 38,000 Palestinians so far. Gaza's Deputy Minister of Labor, Ehab Al-Ghussein, and 3 others were killed in the attack, and an unknown number of others are reportedly wounded. One eyewitness says many victims of the airstrike were children.
Inside the Holy Family Church, there's a large number of displaced people, and as you can see, the victims of the aggression are children. Dozens of children came out in pieces, cut and ripped in pieces, women and young girls, direct targeting with F-16 rockets.
The Israeli military admitted to bombing the school, claiming it was a military hideout and it was hiding a Hamas weapons manufacturing facility. The attack comes after Israel bombed a United Nations school yesterday, killing 16 people and wounding 75. Israel claimed it was targeting militants hiding within the school. Back home, trains to Melbourne Airport could be up and running by the end of the decade after a breakthrough in the stalemate of station locations. Melbourne Airport will back the state government's plan for an above-ground station after years of pushing for an underground option. The Victorian government argued the surface option would be quicker and cheaper, while the airport thought an underground facility would be a better long-term option. Victorian Premier Jacinta Allen says she's happy there is progress on the $10 billion project.
I certainly welcome the acknowledgement overnight and this morning by the airport that their unreasonable demands that they've held for a number of years now to pursue an underground station do not stack up. So we're pleased to see that acknowledgement. But the consequence of the unreasonable position that has been taken for a number of years now is that this project has been delayed by 4 years.
The outer bounds of the devastating tropical storm Beryl have brought heavy rain and strong winds to the U.S. state of Texas. The coming storm, which forecasters expected to become a hurricane before landfall, has prompted coastal residents to board up windows and evacuate beach towns. The earliest storm to develop into a Category 5 hurricane in the Atlantic, Beryl caused at least 11 deaths as it passed through the Caribbean on its way to Texas. Texas officials are warning people along the entire coastline to prepare for possible flooding, severe rain and wind. In Port Lavaca, Jimmy May was boarding up his business to protect the glass.
Just boarding up, protecting this glass in case we get a little bit too much wind, too much trash blowing. This is 4 or 5 foot surge. It's nothing for us. In town, you know, you're on the low-lying areas, obviously. You need to get out of there. It's just a normal day in paradise.
And to sport in rugby league, New South Wales team remains largely unchanged with a backline reshuffle for Queensland heading into the State of Origin decider. For the Blues, Bradman Best will replace injured Latrell Mitchell in the centres with edge forward Mitch Barnett named on the bench. The Maroons have recalled Kaelin Ponga, Dane Gagai and Selwyn Cobo with injuries to the incumbent Queensland wingers forcing the changes. Queensland will have the home ground advantage for the final State of Origin game next week, with coach Billy Slater hoping the side will return to form after a dominant win from New South Wales in Game 2.
This is the team that we feel is our best football team going into this game. It's a big game, 1-1 in the series and the decider here at home, which is pretty exciting. To be honest, the changes personnel-wise aren't going to fix what happened in Game 2. You know, we need to really go after our footy and make sure that, you know, we have an even share of possession, make sure our discipline's, you know, on point, that we're not putting more pressure on ourselves. And it is a different game, but we need to make sure it's different with our actions.
And having a look at the weather around the country, Broome, sunny, top of 26, Perth, possible shower, 21, Adelaide, shower, 216, Melbourne, late shower, 16, Hobart, mostly sunny, 13, Albury-Wodonga, cloudy, 13, Canberra, rain increasing, 14, Wollongong, showers, 17, Sydney, showers, 18, Newcastle, a shower, 220 degrees, the same for Brisbane with a top of 21, Townsville, mostly cloudy, 26, Cairns, a shower, 227, Alice Springs, partly cloudy, 24, and Darwin, sunny, 32 degrees, and the Torres Strait Islands, a sunny day ahead and a top of 29. And that is NITV Radio News.
This is a horrifying...
NITV Radio, Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 1 p.m. or anytime online.
Coming up next in the program, we have a conversation with Jeremy Donovan, one of the most anticipated speakers at this year's International Conference on Thinking. Jeremy will also reflect on the significance of NIDOC Week as the Conference on Thinking falls right in the middle of NIDOC Week. In the program, we also explore a new book released in the context of NIDOC Week 2024 about the story of one woman's efforts to keep First Nations families together. But first, today is the second day of NIDOC Week, so we'll look at winners of the 2024 NIDOC Week Awards. The National NIDOC Week Awards have paid tribute to Indigenous trailblazers making life-changing contributions to their community. It's one of the biggest events on the calendar for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people and has been held this year in Adelaide. Kara Haynes reports.
The achievements of 10 Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people have been recognised in the 2024 NAIDOC Awards. The awards, held each July and this year in Adelaide, recognise the contributions of First Nations people in their communities and celebrate Indigenous excellence. Minister for Indigenous Australians Linda Burney has congratulated each of the winners, who were chosen from a field of 28 finalists. She's highlighted this year's theme, Black, Loud and Proud, as more relevant than ever.
And as the theme for NAIDOC says, keep the fire burning. It is the best theme that could possibly happen. Keep the fire burning, black, loud and proud. This year it's important for us to gather and celebrate black excellence. To marvel everyone at the world's oldest continuing culture. 65,000 years of resilience and 65,000 years of greatness.
Auntie Dulcie Flowers has spent her life advocating for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people's health and has received the National Lifetime Achievement Award in recognition of her accomplishments. The Torres Strait Islander woman started her career in health as a registered nurse and later helped establish the Aboriginal Medical Centre in Redfern. Through her work, Ms. Flowers played a pivotal role in the 1967 referendum campaign, which advocated for First Nations people to be counted in the census and to be considered part of the Australian population. She says this award is for all of her colleagues and their work as well.
We used to watch people getting awards from all around Australia and we thought, when is going to be Redfern's turn to get something? So this is also for Redfern. Now, the theme, keep the fires burning, and black, loud and proud. And I think we've all had loud voices, our voices at long last are being heard.
The NAIDOC Person of the Year is Auntie Muriel Bamblett, a Yorta Yorta elder. As the chief executive of the Victorian Aboriginal Child Care Agency since 1999, Ms. Bamblett has advocated for Indigenous children to be raised within their own culture. She's made special mention for those working in public service.
To all the people that work in the public service, to all the people that serve every day, our people in policy and education and justice and family violence, child protection, I honour you because this award would not be possible without all of those areas working together for better outcomes.
Kim Collard has been named Male Elder of the Year. Kim first worked as a boilermaker and a West Australian police officer before joining academia for a decade at Curtin University and later founding two of Australia's largest Indigenous-owned businesses, Coolbardi and Kuya Australia Fleet Services. In 2014, Kim founded the Bibbulmun Fund, an Indigenous-led philanthropic initiative designed to facilitate positive change by Aboriginal people, for Aboriginal people, and raised $1.4 million to support 19 charitable organisations across Australia.
Like many of us in the Aboriginal community, not too many of us were born with silver spoons in our mouths. I've been lucky enough to have established two very successful businesses in Coolbardi and Kuya Fleet Salary Package and Finance, and that has allowed me to establish our own foundation or philanthropic arm called the Bibbulmun Fund. And it's the Bibbulmun Fund that was established in 2014 that was always designed to give back, and was always, the mantra was always about make a dollar, make a difference.
A common theme during the awards has been keeping the fire burning for the youth. With Indigenous Youth in Focus, there was a warm welcome for the winner of the Youth of the Year Award, Dante Rodriguez. Dante started fighting at just 12 years old and was the first Aboriginal kickboxer and Territorian to represent Australia at an Olympic level, where he brought home silver.
You know, this mob called me up like that. Two, three months ago, and they were interviewing me for this event now. And then they said it for the first time. I never heard it back then, but they asked me, "Black, loud and proud, keep the fire burning." Now, what does that mean to you? And the first time hearing it, I didn't really know what to say or understand it at first. I was like, yeah, well, we're black. We're normally the loudest ones in the room. And we're proud of who we are and those who came before us. But there's much more to that, isn't there? Everyone in this room has done their part to keep the fire burning for their mob, for their country, and for their own values all across Australia.
The National NAIDOC Week Awards will be travelling to Perth next year. Kira Hain, SBS News.
Your community, your conversation. NITV Radio.
We must now step aside for another break, and when we come back, we have a conversation with Kumbayan German Jeremy Donovan, one of the most anticipated speakers at this year's International Conference on Thinking. You're listening to NITV Radio with me, Bertrand Tungandame, and we're broadcasting from Nam on the Kulin Nation this Monday afternoon. Coming up next, well, the 20th edition of the International Conference on Thinking is currently underway in Melbourne, and it features an impressive array of keynote speakers, including two First Nations heavyweights. One of them, Jeremy Donovan. I caught up with him shortly before the program.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
I'm joined by Jeremy Donovan, one of the most anticipated First Nations speakers at the International Conference on Thinking, taking place in Melbourne between the 7th and the 11th of July. The conference promises thought-provoking innovation, creative and critical thinking, and transformative ideas in the context for the greater good as we look to the future. Jeremy, first of all, thanks for joining us and welcome to NITV Radio.
Thanks for having me. I love the opportunity to get to speak to NITV. It's a very important airway for our mob.
Before we delve into the conference, it's a very important event, but it's happening right in the middle of NAIDOC Week. I can't help but just ask you a reflection on the significance of NAIDOC Week before we delve into the conference.
NAIDOC Week is, you know, it is one of the most significant weeks of the year, especially for brothers and sisters, you know, that have similar passions to myself, that work in similar fields that I am working in. One, it's probably one of the craziest times of the year, along with Reconciliation Week. But it's a week where we really get to showcase the absolute beauty that exists within Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander culture here in Australia. And we get to do it on so many different platforms, whether it's a conference like the International Conference of Thought, or whether it's in community, in school, or within corporate Australia. There's significant opportunities that are presented throughout this week, and we really get to showcase our culture. And one of the biggest messages that I always carry through the week of NAIDOC Week and the week of Reconciliation Week is that as Aboriginal people, we are Aboriginal 365 days a year. We don't get to choose when we are, when we're not. And I wouldn't choose when I am and when I am, when I'm not. And so getting businesses especially to celebrate Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander culture throughout the entire year, not just waiting for these 2 weeks. And, you know, with the significance of NAIDOC Week, you know, with the theme of keep the fire burning, it's a very powerful theme because, you know, it reflects on each individual. How do we keep the fire burning? And that is maintaining a relationship to our culture. But for me, especially, it's inspiring the young people around me to connect with culture, but to connect with people and to grow into whatever they want to grow into.
Wow, that's very, very powerfully said. Going into the conference now, as a Kukuyalanji and Gumba Jirman, how do you envision integrating traditional indigenous wisdom with modern thinking strategies?
You know, I think every time I get the opportunity to stand on a stage or sit down with a group of people, I'm sharing a cultural teaching, because our culture has existed through sitting down and sharing in story. And so in the way that I'm maintaining that connection to culture, no matter what, you know, sort of, you know, times have evolved in terms of we're sitting in corporate institutions or in convention centers, but the teaching framework hasn't changed. We're sitting down and there is a shared learning experience where it has to be two-way. And so, you know, every time I get to stand on stage, I think it's an incredible privilege. I think of the people that enabled me to get, you know, have this opportunity, that, you know, the great freedom fighters that fought for the rights of the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in this country. They gave me permission to stand on the stage and have a voice. You know, going to a conference like this, I get the opportunity to stand on the stage and share thoughts that are based around what is significantly important to me as a Gulbangi man, Gumbangya man today, and how that, you know, can be, I guess, nurtured throughout a conference like this, because, you know, there's some really big messages that need to be told at the moment. The theme of the conference is we are on the edge of what? And I think, you know, just the nature of that title is very provocative, because we are on the edge of so many different things in this country, whether we are reflecting from a cultural point of view, or one of the biggest points of conversation that I am talking about and advocating about at the moment is about masculinity and about, you know, rebuilding the strongest version of men. And, you know, one of the businesses that I operate with three other very good brothers of mine is a business called Primal Warrior, which is dedicated to rebuilding the frame of what a man is. So looking at the spiritual health, the mental health, the physical health, and the emotional health, and then that leads into better financial health. Because you only have to open the newspapers or flick through the news on your phone or whatever your device is. And we have a tragedy in this country that needs to be spoken about. And that is about family violence and domestic violence. There are too many women losing their lives at the hands of men. And that is too many broken men that are taking the lives of women. And it's a tragedy that I refuse to remain silent on today.
And given your experience working with young Indigenous men at risk, what innovative approaches do you believe are crucial for empowering Black youth to overcome adversity and embrace their identity?
Yeah, I mean, you know, one of the biggest things that young men need, especially, I mean, let's break it down. Young men need strong men leaders. And when there's no men, it's, you know, when there's no strong men around, you have negative influence or negative role models. You know, I look back at the life that I lived as a young person, you know, where I was incarcerated, I was in and out of detention center, I was a very broken young man. And it's because the role models that I had around me were negative role models, you know, and it wasn't until I got around people that would elevate me and lift me and inspire me that I was able to become the best version of myself. You know, and still today, I am constantly seeking out mentors, elders that allow me to grow, to continue being a better version of myself. And so, you know, when I look at the crisis that young people have today, it's a tragedy, because the same challenges they are facing today were the same challenges I faced 30 years ago. You know, there's a broken system in terms of our residential care. Our foster care system is completely broken, I believe. Whereby, you know, we're not nurturing these young kids that just need love, they need boundaries, and they need hope. And the moment someone invested hope into me, all of a sudden I stood up straight, I had a voice again, and that's when I started to shine. And so, you know, I think, you know, the great role modeling of my grandfather and his brothers, my elders on community, became a very powerful setting for the rebuilding of my broken young self. And so today I look at the young people and say, follow the footsteps that I'm walking today, not the footsteps that I walked when I was the same age as you. That, you know, you cannot believe in a dream if you are surrounded by a wall, if you are in a cell, there is no room to breathe life into your dreams. It's a huge part of the work that I do with young men, is about building their capacity to believe that anything is possible if you work hard enough, that it's not good enough just to have a dream. Just having a dream doesn't give you, it's the action of creating the goals to get to those dreams that brings things to reality.
Now, your abstract mentions addressing some of the most pressing topics our society faces today. You just mentioned one really that is a scourge on our society, domestic violence. Can you elaborate on which other issues you plan to highlight
and
how they relate to the conferences?
Incarceration.
Yeah.
You know, that there is a documentary called The Incarceration Nation. That is this nation. It's one of the great blemishes on this country. I've been privileged enough to travel the entire world. There is no place I would rather call home. But tragically, in this country, the prison system is a broken system that if you end up in that system, it is not designed to rebuild you or to rehabilitate you. In fact, what it does is further break you. And, you know, it's a tragedy in this country when we make up 3.5% of the total population of this country, yet we represent 76% of the kids that are in detention. And it doesn't get much better when it goes into adult prison. And then when you look at the women that are being incarcerated, women are the fastest growing rate per capita than any, you know, within Australian prisons. It's a tragedy on this incredibly, you know, so-called lucky country, but not lucky for everyone.
And in the context of the conference, focus on enhancing thinking, learning and creativity across disciplines, how do you believe your background as a musician and artist contributes to innovative problem solving and cross-cultural understanding?
Yeah, I think, you know, the beauty of music and the beauty of art is that you don't need to understand it to feel it. And that is the beautiful part about music. It is an unspoken language whereby we can come from two corners of the world, but hear each other's music and feel a connection. And it's one of the biggest things that can create a change is then when, if I can provoke a thought process within the audience that creates a different or an alternate thinking path to some of the things that are pressing our society at the moment, like domestic violence or family violence, or protecting the most vulnerable family members, or the incarceration situation. If collective thought creates collective energy, and collective energy creates collective change. And so that's where I hope to influence through the experience as an artist, the experience as a musician, through the experience as a storyteller, to be able to inspire a change in thought processes, especially around some of the prejudicial systems that keep Australia very much, you know, sort of divided.
You mentioned your work with the youth and men, but I can't help but relate to you winning the Australian Speaker of the Award in 2011. How do you adapt your communication style to effectively engage with the men you work with, the diverse international audiences, and especially at ICOT 2024? How would you adapt that message to really take it home?
I look back on my life that I lived and some of the incredible hardships that I wouldn't wish upon anybody. But I'm glad that I've lived those lives because the reality is they have made me who I am. They have given me the ability and the tools to navigate the world that I'm walking in, no matter which world it may be. So I'm very comfortable walking into a park and sitting down with people that have found themselves homeless. I'm very comfortable walking into a prison and sitting down with people that are serving sentences. I'm very comfortable standing on a stage with strangers, and I'm very comfortable sitting in a boardroom with senior executives of a tier one business. That as a result of the life that I've lived, it gave me the skills to be able to adapt the language that I need to use to articulate the message. So I'm always changing the way that I speak to ensure that the audience that's in front of me hears and then goes and listens to what I'm actually saying. There's a distinct difference between how you hear something and listen to something. When you listen to something, you feel the message that's in the words.
but I won't hold you much longer. I'll just ask you for closing thoughts, and maybe we can catch up after the conference to learn more about your work and maybe the outcome of the conference.
Absolutely. No, I would love that. You know, and any opportunity to be able to share a continued message through, you know, through the broadcasting of NITV, I would love to be involved in whatever possible, you know, way. But, you know, I would love to touch base after the conference and share my experience on what, you know, what my experience was at the conference, the engagement and how it was received. But, you know, the biggest thing is, you know, is challenge, you know, challenge the version of yourself every day to be the better, to be a better version. If you can get 1% better every day, that you are on the road to a much better version of yourself.
Jeremy Donovan, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us on NITV Radio today.
Amazing. Thank you, Baba.
And this conversation with Jeremy Donovan is already published on our website. If you want to listen to it again, you can find it on sbs.com.au/NITV Radio. We must now step aside for another break, but stay with us, because when we come back, we have the story of Mel Brown and her fight to keep Aboriginal families together.
NITV Radio, on radio, online and mobile.
You're listening to NITV Radio, coming to you from Nam on the Kulin Nation. Next story is about a gripping memoir, Shades of Me, by Ngunnawal woman Melinda Brown, who shares her profound journey of self-discovery and cultural awakening set against the backdrop of Nido quake. As Aboriginal families continue to face challenges, Mel's story stands as a testament to one woman's relentless fight to preserve and protect her community. Mel Brown gave us some insights into her transformation from a survivor of abuse to a determined advocate for First Nations children and families. Her book, Shades of Me, delves into her transformation from a survivor of abuse to a determined advocate for First Nations children and families.
The earlier part of the book where I talk about family violence, domestic violence, living through it and being in it, you didn't have a name for it back then. We certainly have names for it today. Back then it was just, you know, you just survived it. I didn't know that my house was that different to any other house. I had moments of when I realised, you know, as I got a little bit older, that, hang on, this isn't right. But by then I'd already left home. I was in a relationship of my own by then. And at that point in time, living in, you know, some pretty big domestic violence as well. And it took me quite a long time to recognise it for what it was, because it was all so normal for me. That's what's sad for so many of us women living in, and men, but us women living in domestic violence. Sometimes we get so used to living in that state of trauma that you don't recognise that there's another way in which to live. And I guess as I learned about that combined with learning about my Aboriginality was where I really moved into child protection at that point. Moving into child protection was certainly a really interesting phase in my life. I was the first Aboriginal person they'd ever employed back then in ACT in child protection. So I was doing it really tough. I did it really tough. Myself and then we got another Aboriginal person working with us, and we pushed and pushed and pushed that we, you know, eventually at the end of the day, we got an Aboriginal child protection unit, but there was a lot of steps that happened to get to that point. And I guess that's where I was recognised for my work, where I got my public service award, was recognised for that really big effort that I put into it. I didn't do it alone though. There was a few other people that stood beside me and were really amazing support during that time as well. So, and I guess that's what took me from domestic violence to child protection, was that walking my journey and learning my healing, not learning, but learning, you know, that life can be different, and beginning my healing to the point where I felt that I could work in this area, an area of child protection where children were being abused, that I actually sort of knew, had a sense of what, you know, children and families would be going through because I'd been there myself.
Yeah, and this actually helped to contribute to developing policy, and your case highlights actually things that you mentioned that are really, really important for people to really understand how significant they are about mainstreaming child protection. And you really highlight the need to have culturally appropriate services, because you lived it And you, through your work, you also highlighted how, I'm not going to delve too much into it. I'll let you maybe explain how you came to developing the policies and help develop policies, best practice in child protection.
Yeah. As I said, you know, I was a bit of a, you know, I didn't see it back then, but in reflection, I was a bit of a pioneer back then. New South Wales certainly had their identified Aboriginal positions and Aboriginal child protection units, but in Canberra, we didn't have those at that time. I looked to New South Wales at that point, constantly looking at what their policies and procedures and even their legislation looked like. And constantly I was like that dog with, you know, that proverbial dog with a bone. I wouldn't let go. And I just kept coming back and coming back. So I think by the end of it, I pushed and pushed with the help of other good people. We finally got legislation around the Aboriginal placement principle. And certainly by the end of it, we had an Aboriginal unit which recognised that Aboriginal families might and sometimes have different needs to that of mainstream non-Aboriginal families. So that was really great that that was recognised. It didn't come easy. There was, you know, it was always changing policy and procedure and legislation at that level was really difficult. And at the end, I guess it came at a price where it was time, you know, that I'd seen too much and just done too much, that it was time for a change after a while. So, but it was brilliant. Like I have in the book, great stories. I guess one of the things I'm good at is seeing, I can see the serious side, but my goodness, I can see the funny side of things too. So in the book, there's some really sad stories, some humbling stories, and some really, really funny stories about things that happened way back then.
Well, you tell it with a lot of humor. I recall one incident which really is a bit scary where, well, the service wasn't working properly and you almost left kids in foster care of, you know, at someone's place who wasn't even asked.
We were a really great office back then, and we used to have an award ceremony at the end of each year, you know, just, you know, your social club sort of thing. And I continually won the award for that one, even though it only happened once, thank goodness, a new way of recruiting foster carers. You take them to the wrong address, or you take them to a family, you leave them almost behind when you realise that you've got the wrong address, the right street, just the wrong suburb.
Yeah.
And that made sense why the gentleman kept looking at me going, I don't know why you're leaving these children with me.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, don't you know you're a foster carer? You should know why children are coming. But I wasn't saying that. I was thinking that in my head. And it was, you know, as we're walking away, when he really came and said, look, you can't... who are you? Why are you leaving these children? It's just like, oh my goodness, wrong address, right street, wrong suburb.
But a man who was very welcoming and very, well, could have ended up very dramatically, although it's a funny situation.
He was very lovely. He was so humble. I was just so pleased he didn't remember my name or make a report to me, about me, because I could have been in a little bit of trouble over that one. But yeah. I often used to think about that one sometimes. Yeah. That was lucky.
And that was part of my conversation with Mel Brown about her book, Shades of Me. The full story is published on our website, sbs.com.au/NITV Radio. And during Night Oak Week, Mel Brown will be talking about her memoir throughout Night Oak Week, from Brisbane to Sydney. And that's all we have time for on NITV Radio this Monday afternoon. Your program will be back on Wednesday and Friday this week with more stories from right across the country. I am Bertrand Tungandami, thanking you for your company this Monday afternoon. Till next time, bye for now. Yalu.
SBS is Australia's most trusted multilingual broadcaster. Our listeners are loyal, highly engaged, and have supported countless local businesses. We offer advertising packages for businesses of all sizes.
Our experienced sales team will guide you through the process of owning a great campaign. Bring your own ad or have our production team make you something in one of our 68 languages. Start the conversation with your new audience today. Email sales@sbs.com.au.